Welcome to episode 504 of the Entertainment 2.0 podcast, brought to you by thedigitalmediazone.com. I'm Josh Pollard.
And I'm Richard Gunther, and this is the show that puts you in control of your favorite movies, music, shows, and games. Josh, is this our, is this our Christmas episode? Because, like, next week is Christmas Eve. I'm not recording Christmas Eve. I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, Christmas Eve is not going to work for me. So, yeah. And at this rate, I'm still going to be wrapping presents on Christmas Eve.
Oh, well, so, welcome to my life.
Yeah, we haven't even started yet, so we're in a world of hurt. While people probably don't care about my wrapping dilemmas, they probably are wondering where the heck we've been the last couple of weeks. It's pretty much all my fault. My life has been
all
insane.
Josh. All plus, Josh.
Plus, I had a terrible cough and was not feeling well at all last week. So that wasn't going to work.
Yep. First, you take all this time off. Then you come back and you're like, oh, I don't know. I don't think I'm going to record this week. Oh, I don't know. There's no news this week.
Well, there wasn't any news that first week. But we absolutely could have filled up a show last week. And we had to cut some stuff from this week, so we should probably stop bantering about when or why we didn't do shows, and instead just get right into it, because we've also got a couple pieces of feedback. So these were sent in to us via email at entertainment20@thedigitalmediazone.com, and this first one is pretty old. Sorry, Bruce. It's from Bruce. When you don't do shows for a couple weeks at a time, the messages stack up. So. Mm-hmm. He says, hi guys, I loved show 500. I was quite late to the party, so I still have Windows 7 Media Center Edition and Windows Home Server 2011. I've been looking at alternatives and I'm dabbling with Plex. I really like My Movies, and I've stumbled across a program called MM Browser by CamConSoft. He asked, have you seen this yourselves? And do you have any views on it, good or bad, that those would be appreciated. Thanks again, and love the show. So I think the product is actually called Chameleon Media Center, right?
I believe so. And I think we probably need to step back and let people know what this is if they don't know what it is. Because I had never heard of this. Had you,
Me
Josh?
Neither. Nope, never heard of this.
Yeah. So Chameleon Media Center, from what we can tell, is something of a container or a skin that allows you to run My Movies, that plugin that allows you to catalog and maintain all of your recorded and backed up content, and run My Movies independently of Media Center. So you don't have to have Media Center. That means you don't have to stay with Windows 7 or 8. That means you could use Windows 10 and still run the full Media Center's like experience that you would get with My Movies. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it's a really smart idea. So neither of us have gotten a chance to check this out, but it does look really nice. If you're really missing My Movies, then it's definitely worth checking out. We've got a link. We will have a link for it in the show notes. And I think the only other thing worth pointing out here is it isn't free. It looks like it is about $22 per license. That's not a lot of money. And frankly, as a professional software developer, I like seeing developers get paid for their work. So yep. I think that's a pretty fair amount of money for this program if you've been really missing My Movies.
Yeah, and also, if you've been using this, please let us know. One of the questions he had was, you know, do we know anything about this? And what are our thoughts on it? So if you're using it, we'd love to know what your thoughts are so we can share them back with Bruce on a future episode.
Right.
All right, well, our next message is from Ron. And he says, I have listened to Entertainment 2.0 since the first man, Adam, walked the hallowed halls of E2O. Wow, that's a long time ago. I do admit to using the 30-second skip more these days, as I do not game, nor do I have an Xbox, and I haven't been streaming. In fact, I built two Windows 7 PCs many years ago and have each of them connected to a Vizio P75-inch Ultra HD monitor in my two abodes. Nice. That's a nice setup.
Mm-hmm.
For tuners, I use an antenna and four Avermedia PCIs for over-the-air and a Seton Infinity TV4 PCI for cable for half the year. I haven't allowed any updates to come in for many years, ever since Microsoft tried to turn off the remote desktop hack. So the lack of security updates is old news for me. Everything has worked flawlessly for many years. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. I'm considering EPG123 as a replacement for the guide data if it stops. It's definitely going to stop.
Definitely.
I also get discs from Netflix. Yes, Richard, there is someone else out there. However, listening to your excellent program has made me wonder what I'm missing. So I tried Netflix Ultra HD streaming, and I watched your excellent suggestions for The Politician, Grace and Frankie, and Stranger Things, all of which I enjoy very much. It annoys me to no end that Grace and Frankie is only on disc up to season 2, and streaming is up to season 5, and The Politician is not on disc at all. However, discs offer Homeland, which Netflix does not stream, and a much more comprehensive movie library. I was shocked at how few movies are on streaming Netflix. Discs also come with DTS HD or Dolby True HD for my 7.1 sound system, which isn't possible on streaming. I don't know about that. I've also read that Ultra HD on streaming is not any better than HD on disc, and there are a few movies streaming in Ultra HD anyway. So I have a few questions. One, you talk about Plex a lot. I tried it, but saw no advantage to Media Center. I don't transcode to other devices, and it doesn't provide access to protected content like my Seton tuners do. You complain that their guide and Silicon Dust home runs is not as good as Media Center. So what's the advantage of Plex or Silicon Dust?
All right, well, I'm going to step in, give your voice a break. It's a really, really great message so far from Ron with some really good questions. So the answer, like, why might you pick Plex or Silicon Dust? Now, Ron he seems to be focusing more on the DVR and live TV type capabilities of the two services. Even from the DVR perspective, I think the biggest advantage to Plex over Windows Media Center is it's natively built around this idea of making your content available basically anywhere and on basically any device. And you can't really do that with Media Center.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
Kind of works with HD Home Run, but only within your network.
I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, if you're happy with Media Center is working for you and you don't necessarily want to depart from it, I'd say, yeah, let's try and keep it alive. Let's try and keep it working for you. So he has some more questions. He says, can you actually see the difference in Ultra HD? I watched Chasing Coral streaming, and while it looked great, I'm not sure I could see the difference between HD on Blu-ray and streaming on Ultra HD. This is a hard one, and I don't know if you've done much, you know, a side-by-side comparison, Josh, but for me, it's pretty obvious that the Ultra HD streaming video content is not as good as what you're going to get on an Ultra HD disc.
Right.
And that's why I end up watching new movies that I've purchased off of the disc, because I want that full experience and I want the Atmos and everything else, which I still can't get through Plex yet. So even if it's just, yeah, sure, I can just go to the Disney Plus app or I can just go to Apple TV and watch it there, I know that that stream is going to be a much, much lower bit rate and is going to look more grainy and not as sharp and not as good a picture, not as mm-hmm. good color depth as what you would get if you're watching it from the source media.
Yeah, I've never tried to compare an Ultra HD stream versus a Blu-ray. I do think in some cases that Blu-ray might actually look better. But a lot of this ends up being subjective, you know, depending on TV size and your distance from the TV, you might not be able to tell the difference in Ultra HD at all. So this is really up to your own personal use case. And
now we know he has a 75-inch TV. So in all likelihood, he has the ability to see a nicely detailed picture.
And he's got a good one. The Vizio P series is a really nice set.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that there's some truth to what he's saying there. I think standard HD on Blu-ray and Ultra HD coming through a stream, he's probably right. There probably isn't a whole lot of difference there. And that's kind of sad. And like I said, that's why I still watch stuff off of disc and why oftentimes I end up watching stuff off of my Plex server. Now, there is where I have the advantage with Plex is that by having backed up all of my content, which is an ordeal, but by having gone through that and putting all of those discs in their full form without compressing them at all, then I get that full video quality even when I'm playing off of Plex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just, like you said, that is not an easy task to rip 4K Blu-rays.
No. All right, the next question is, how do you get DTS HD 7.1 audio while streaming? And the question it really is, it depends on the device you're using and the service that you have. So some services even have full Atmos capability. And I believe that Vudu is the one that came out with 7.1 audio first, if I remember correctly.
I don't know. I'm definitely going to defer to you on this because I'm still just a 5.1 guy. So anything above that, I don't really have top of mind.
Yeah. So, you know, you have to have the right device. You have to be using the right service. I don't know that if you're streaming off of a PC that you would be able to get that audio, at least not if you're running Windows 7. In Windows 10, you probably could get HD 7.1 audio if the web-based version of that streaming service provided HD 7.1 audio. And again, that might not be available depending on the service.
Mm-hmm.
You really need to be doing the streaming from services like this from some sort of streaming box to get the full advantage of their high-resolution audio and video. And then finally, he says, or he asks, how do you get DRM protected content other than TiVo?
The only option that I know of is HD Home Run DVR, because they do support their HD Home Run Prime tuner through their DVR service. Getting an HD Home Run DVR, HD Home Run Prime, I mean, that's going to be difficult. Like you can't buy them new anymore. They're not available. The Prime 6 is not out yet. We don't know when it's going to be out. And that doesn't help you with your Seton tuner. So that's not an easy option for you at being someone who doesn't have an HD Home Run Prime already. Richard, can you think of any other options?
Nope.
Yeah.
No, this is really it. I mean, If it's about recording and that's what you're trying to accomplish, then this is pretty much all you can do. The alternative, potentially, depending on whether you want recording or not, you may have to look at specific services, but the alternative might be one of these cable TV alternatives, right?
So, like a YouTube TV or a Sling TV or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So now he closes out saying, right now I'm looking at the options, but I'm not seeing anything that seems any better than what I have. My over-the-air is free, and when I have cable, it's only $40. Netflix discs is $11 for Blu-ray, although I might have to also buy streaming for the shows you've talked me into. Even factoring in EPG123, it seems better than the alternatives. I look forward to hearing your opinions. Well, this was great. I really enjoyed these questions because I think this is not dissimilar from a lot of people who are still holding on to Media Center wondering why they should bother switching.
Yeah. And I think the other thing to maybe think about here is there's really no reason not to try Plex. It'll run on your Windows 7 Media Center PC. So if you just want to play around with it and see what that looks like and how their library system works and whether you would take advantage of being able to access your content in other places and on your tablets and phones and stuff like that, there's no reason not to try it unless you're like, really just don't want to put any more software on that machine because it's in a state that you really like it. You could,
if it ain't broke.
Right. You could also install Plex on another machine in your house and just share those folders across the network that have your recordings. That's maybe a little less risky. So there's some other options there. But yeah, like if Media Center is still working out great for you and you're clearly not concerned about not getting Windows updates, then I don't know that there's a big reason for you to change.
All right. Well, thank you again for the good message and questions. And that is going to wrap our feedback. Again, you can send us feedback at entertainment2.0@thedigitalmediazone or use the contact form on our website. And you know, while we're talking about Plex, we might as well just dive right into our first story, which of course is always Plex. It's kind of like on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. The first question is always about Trump. Like, if you don't know what the answer is, it's probably going to be Trump. Our first story is almost always about Plex. And we talked about the story a while ago that Plex announced that they were going to partner with Warner Brothers to bring a bunch of movies to Plex. And that service is now available, but it is way, way bigger than I expected it to be. So you can now get access to thousands of free movies and TV shows from over half a dozen studios. The kicker is that, like Tubi or like Crackle, like some of these other services out there, you have to deal with advertising. Now, they say that the advertising is a fraction of what you would normally experience while watching a regular TV show over the air. So don't expect that you're going to be interrupted constantly. And that's been my experience with Tubi and Vudu and stuff like that as well. But this has been rolled out. It doesn't require any sort of paid subscription. You don't have to have a Plex Pass. Everybody can get access to this. And it'll show up on your left navigation as one of the main options that you can select from, just like the web content and title and stuff like that just kind of popped up there when that became available. Here's my complaint about it. It's not on their Plex Media Player application.
Which is their desktop application.
Which is the desktop application that you would use on a Media Center PC or a home theater PC. So that's a little frustrating. Hopefully that'll be coming out soon, or maybe the update came since the last time I checked, which was a couple of days ago. Now, you may remember that when we talked about this last time, we expressed concerns, and Josh, you even wrote about, you know, speculating a little bit about, well, if the studios are going to be partnering with Plex, what information is Plex going to be providing the studios? Is the information in and about our personal libraries safe, or is somehow it going to be possible for these studios to get access to what we have in our libraries, which are all backed up from content that we've purchased ourselves, but still that's a gray area. Mm-hmm. What, you know, and they came out very quickly. Plex came out very quickly and said, no, we're not doing that. So the announcement for this reinforces that the studios are not going to have any access to anything outside of the movies that they have provided specifically and only through this service, what you're watching and what you have access to.
Right. The studios will not know what's in your library, what you're watching in your library, what different libraries you have, how many user accounts, or like none of that stuff. The only information the studios get is what movies are you watching through this streaming, this ad-supported streaming service.
And if I understand this right, I think they're taking it one step further. They're saying what movies are people watching, it will be aggregated.
Mm. Yeah.
So
probably.
Yeah. So this is pretty cool. I looked through the movies. You know, it's, I want to say it's kind of the usual suspects that you're going to see on, like I said, it's not the same movies, but it's the caliber of movies that you'll see on Tubi or Crackle or, you know, any of these other services that offer you free content, IMDb movies, stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not exactly the top tier stuff. Right.
Yeah, exactly. But sometimes that's really good if there are catalog titles that you really like, but they weren't big hits. So often they're not as readily available.
Right. Yeah, it's a good point. All right. Our next story is about the HD Home Run DVR, actually. The folks over at Silicon Dust have made a couple of slight tweaks to the overall user interface for their app. So basically, what I can tell is when you're switching channels and bringing up the actual user interface over live TV, then it's added a clock, it's added the channel that you're watching, and the program title. They all appear in the upper left-hand corner, and they have like a translucent-ish background to make them readable over what it is that you're watching. I didn't really notice any other major changes to it. It's still got the same style of grid that they've been using, their slice view on the right-hand side. And this new user interface is available now on all of their apps except Roku, because Roku apparently has to be programmed differently than all of their other platforms, which is a pain, but they say it's mostly Roku's fault. Richard, you've at least seen the screenshots. I don't know if you've played with it much at home. What are your thoughts on the redesign?
With it. So I wasn't excited about the first wave of changes that I saw when they first announced this. And let me just say that their follow through on this continues down that same path. I don't understand why they made most of the changes that they did. From what I can tell, I have to imagine that they had feedback that some of the things are hard to see on the screen, and we don't feel like we have critical information that we need when we're watching something. And I get that. So they have made changes to make the DVR pages bigger and bolder. In the process, things don't line up now properly, depending on what you have in your queue and what device you're using. And so headings don't align properly with the content, and buttons are completely different sizes from each other, even though they're on the same row. There's a search icon that doesn't look like anything else in the entire interface. I really don't understand what they were doing here. And quite frankly, this reinforces my frustration with this whole experience that they provide. I love the service that they have. I love the hardware that they have. I love how fast and instantaneous and easy setup this whole ecosystem is and offers to customers, but I hate the experience. You talked about the things that you now have available in these translucent blocks. There are four separate, differently sized blocks now hovering over the screen in the top left corner with those four pieces of information that you mentioned. One of them is a space for a channel logo. If the channel logo is black or dark, it barely even shows up on top of the dark background that it's on. There are just so many things that feel like they're lacking the polish and expertise of a trained UX specialist. This is what I've said from the beginning about this experience, and I don't think it's changed, unfortunately. End of rant.
All right. Well, you're the UI / UX expert of basically all the people that I know. So I think you make a whole bunch of really good points there. It's far from perfect. I don't think it's awful. And I think that most people who aren't going to notice as many of those things. I didn't look at it and think, wow, those boxes are all three different heights. Like clearly the middle one with the program title is the biggest, and I would want that one to be the most prominent. I don't know. It's fine. I think that this is better than it was, but it could go a lot further.
I agree.
Okay. So, Richard, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
What is TiVo Plus?
Yeah, that thing that your TiVo is nagging you about all the time now? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, that thing.
Yeah, so if you have TiVo with the more recent interface, and by more recent, I mean over the last 2 years, what's known as version 4 of the TiVo interface, previously known as codename Hydra, is the one that's black and blocky and has lots of tile images and stuff like that. They are now offering free specialty channels available to TiVo customers only called TiVo Plus. And your guide is now peppered until you actually decide that, okay, I want to go see what this thing is. Your guide is peppered with rows that are fake channels, just kind of snuck in with the rest of your channel guide for some reason. And if you click through, then that takes you to sign up for the TiVo Plus service. Oddly enough, now that I've actually enabled the TiVo Plus service, they don't show up in my guide anymore. Frankly, I am happier about that, but I don't understand what they were doing. I think it was just promotion. They were just promoting it in the guide. So now I'm in it and I look around and it just seems like a whole lot of content that I have no interest in. These are specialty channels. Maybe some are cooking. Maybe some are about, I'm just going to give examples. I don't know if they actually have these, but think about how your TV or some of your cable services are starting to come out with their own specialized content, much of which feels like packaging videos from YouTube or RedTube TV or something like that and making a channel out of it. That's how this feels. I don't know. I didn't see anything there that I was particularly interested in diving into. And worse yet, you know, I joked that they had these fake things sprinkled throughout the guide. There doesn't actually seem to be any like timed guide for what's available when on any of these channels.
Yeah. I feel the same way. And I've only got OTA, so it's not like I've got 900 channels to watch. Like, I've got like six channels to watch, and I'm still not interested in any of this TiVo Plus content. Like, I love TiVo. I love what it gives me, but these random streaming offerings that, like you said, lots of people are offering, they just don't interest me. It's not the stuff that I want to watch.
Yeah. So, that's what it is. You can check it out. It's free if you have the latest version on either a Bolt, a Romeo, or the newest box, which I already forget the name of.
The Edge.
The Edge, of course. The Edge.
You know, like the guitarist.
Right. Okay. I don't know who you're talking about. So I am looking forward to actually seeing the Edge firsthand at CES shortly. I already have my appointment set up with the folks at TiVo to find out what's going on with them. Because if you remember, Josh, one of the things they talked about last year was a software app that would be an extender for TiVo that you could run on Amazon TV, on Apple TV, on Roku. That ain't there yet.
Yeah. Yeah. Still waiting on that. I want that.
Yeah.
Want that a lot. All right. So, let's move on. Have you, Richard, ever rented a movie digitally and gotten 10, 15, 20 minutes into the movie and thought, this is garbage. I don't want to watch the rest of this. I have a feeling you've been there.
I have been there. Not very often, though, because I'm pretty discriminate about what I rent. It's usually Edward that goes on movie renting binges when I'm on travel.
Well, previously, if that was the case for you, your options were, well, I guess I'll
suck
just,
it up.
Yeah, suck it up and watch it because I paid for it. Or I'm not watching this, but I guess I paid $3.99 or $5.99 or whatever it was that you paid. Hopefully, if you're listening to this show, it's like $5.99 because if you're on like Vudu, you're getting an HDX, so it looks really good. You could turn it off, I guess. Those were your only two options. Now, Vudu is giving you an option, and they're calling it Rental Redo, which I really think is a fun, great name for this service.
I love it. I love it.
So the idea is, if you hate this movie and you're less than 30 minutes into the movie, you can click the redo button and it's going to essentially return the rental. You don't watch it anymore. And they'll give you a credit equal to the amount that you paid for that rental. Now, it's not going to be a credit back onto your credit card or anything like that. It's a credit back onto your account so that you can use it on a new movie. But this is great. Like, this is actually thinking about what the consumer might actually want, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is so, so smart. I love this. Now, you know, you may have heard rumors that Walmart is thinking about maybe trying to offload Vudu, try to sell it or something. So people are worried about, well, you know, what's the future of Vudu? It's really the only home of some of my content. And what if I've invested in a lot of stuff there with digital conversion? I don't think Vudu is going away. I think Vudu has a long history of being one of the best services out there, and it's had staying power no matter who ends up ultimately owning it. This shows you, like when they were early to adopt and just do Ultraviolet better than anyone else did, like when they jumped on board Movies Anywhere as soon as it was available, and Disney Movies Available when that, or Movies Anywhere when that came out, they really think about the customer experience. And I love this. I think this is fantastic. I'd love to see other services think about this. I'd like to see Apple think about this.
Right, right. We do see this in some of the app ecosystems. We see this from some of the digital game companies out there. Steam will give you a refund if you've played the game for less than 2 hours or something like that. So it is really nice to see it come to the video rental services. Now, if for some reason you thought this would be really fun to abuse, which I can't understand why, they do have a little bit of protection in there. You only get 4 redos per month. That seems pretty generous to me.
I think that's fair. You must have really bad taste in movies if you right. need more than that.
Yes. Maybe you need to get recommendations from better friends,
yeah.
people who actually like you. I'm not yeah. really sure who you're listening to if you need that many rental redos in a month. But
yeah, maybe look at the viewer score before you rent it. Right. I don't know.
If the Rotten Tomatoes rating is under 50, just don't rent it, guys.
Oh, no. I disagree with you there. If the Rotten Tomatoes score is under 50, you have to look at the viewer score, too. Because I've watched many movies where the Rotten Tomatoes score was awful and the viewer score was very high, and I ended up liking it.
Yeah, I guess what I should really do is make the caveat. If the Rotten Tomatoes score is under 50 and it's not a Fast and the Furious movie, then maybe you don't want to watch it.
Because what, were they all under?
No, not all of them, but there were some. There were definitely some that did not have great ratings. Yeah. As a little side tangent here, I don't know if I've mentioned this on the show. My wife and I were kid-free over the Thanksgiving weekend. This was not my suggestion. This was Jen's suggestion. On Black Friday, she said, we should stay home, stay in our pajamas, and have a Fast and the Furious movie marathon.
I love that.
And I said, there's 9 movies. I don't think I'm up for watching 9 movies. But we did watch 4 of them. So it was a good day. It was a really good day. All right, we have one more video story. This is a really fast one. Roku now supports 5.1 audio and 4K video for Hulu. So if you're a big Hulu person, you've been waiting for some 4K support on your Roku, now you finally got it. You finally got it. So we'll have a link in the show notes. This is not the only device that has support for 5.1 or 4K, but Roku actually does a pretty decent job of documenting what devices support their different services. So we'll have show notes, links in the show notes for you to figure out whether your devices support those things. So
and nice if it doesn't, don't get too upset yet, because remember, Hulu doesn't have an enormous amount of content in 4K yet or in 5.1 right. audio, just largely their own stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're just dying to watch The Handmaid's Tale in 5.1 and 4K, then sure. But most of the other stuff, your regular network TV stuff is not in 4K.
Get your anguish in the highest possible fidelity.
Right. Well, speaking of high fidelity, let's move on to our audio stories. And, well, audio story. This one is from Tidal, the music streaming service that made its name around having the highest possible audio quality. And I'm curious, Richard, if, well, actually, no, thinking about this more, I know the answer is going to be no. But I was curious if maybe you might want to try out Tidal again for this, because they're now adding Dolby Atmos music support if you're on their hi-fi tier, which last I checked is about $20 a month for that tier of service. It gets you their highest quality music streaming available, and now some of it in Dolby Atmos music. Now, it's not everything. It's mostly music from Universal and Warner, but I'm sure it's not even everything from Universal and Warner, because that would be insane. That's a lot of music. What is Dolby Atmos music? Well, I think the best way to explain this, I'm just going to read for you what the Engadget article said, because I think they do a really good job of explaining this. They say, for instance, you might hear the vocals coming from the front while the other instruments are coming from all around you. That means listeners can discover hidden details and subtleties with unparalleled clarity. Now, that last part, that sounds like marketing speak. It is marketing speak. That was from Tidal. That wasn't from Engadget. So basically, it just gives you a different way of listening to the music. It's surround sound for your music. And it does sound like a really cool experience. Now, why isn't Richard going to try this out? Because it's only on certain Android devices right now. You can't do this on iPhone, at least not right now.
Well, and I don't even understand the whole idea of it being on a mobile device. Like, we're talking about surround sound. So how are you getting surround sound from your mobile device? I would think this would be something that you would maybe play through, I don't know, your Sonos system, or maybe Tidal that's available through your receiver or something like that. That would make sense to me if that were available in Dolby Atmos. All that said, I would love to know the numbers for how much music content is actually available in Dolby Atmos.
Yeah.
I have to imagine it's small.
It's got to be small. And of course, they don't provide those numbers.
I mean, the industry experimented with multi-channel music multiple times. And the last incarnation of this was the yet another format war between Sony and everyone else, a DVD audio and Super Audio CD. And both of those formats offered 5.1 sound for music. And you could buy CDs in full 5.1 music. It was really cool. I had a car that could play them, and it was an amazing experience. I imagine Atmos would take that even further. But, you know, like the Super Audio CD section, and this was in the heyday of CDs, was like maybe three bins.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I don't really get this. I understand starting with mobile, because that's probably where the vast majority of their listeners are listening, but I am curious how that works, and it would be way cooler from an actual Atmos setup in your living room or in your home theater, right, for sure. All right, so that's pretty much it around the Atmos stuff. If you do sign up for this and you start listening to music that has an Atmos version, by default, that's the version it'll play for you. And this Atmos thing doesn't cost extra. I mean, you're already paying $20 a month for the service. It would kind of stink to have to pay even more to get the Atmos thing. So anybody who checks this out, let us know. I'm very curious to see what it's actually like, because it sounds cool. And I want to try this out even in the lower fidelity versions. Like, there's no reason you couldn't do the Atmos separation stuff at a lower bitrate. You absolutely could, but then they're not going to. So, whatever. All right, let's move on to Richard's favorite section and apparently Bruce's favorite section. No, it was Ron who said he uses the 30-second skip on the gaming section of our news. It's going to be kind of big. I think he's going to be hitting that 30-second skip a few times this episode.
Come on, I challenge Josh to not take forever on this story.
You know, I don't think I'm going to take forever. There's a podcast from a very, very major video game news outlet that is all about Xbox stuff. They do a weekly Xbox show. It's an hour long. And they did an episode last week. And then the day after the Game Awards, they put out an extra episode just on this topic. And they talked for another hour and 15 minutes just on this topic. So I think I can do this faster than them, probably.
Okay, here we go.
Okay, so last week at the Game Awards, this is a huge, huge event now. It is the award show for video games, and it's massive now. Microsoft surprised everybody by coming out on stage and actually talking about Scarlet, which they didn't do at their own event just a couple weeks prior to this, XO19. They came out here and not only talked about it, they showed us what the console looks like and told us the name. And that's a pretty big deal. Like, I did not expect any of that stuff this early, because this next console doesn't come out until holiday 2020. We're probably looking at early November of 2020. So we are at least 11 months away at this point from getting our hands on these consoles. The name? Xbox Series X. We'll come back to the name. We'll come back to it. Okay, Richard? So you can kind of save your feedback here. It looks... So we also got to see what it looks like. And it basically looks like a PC tower, but it's not nearly as big. So the base of it is square, and the width of those two sides is about the width of an Xbox controller. So not super wide. And then for height, it's about the height of if you take three Xbox controllers and stack them on top of each other end to end. That ends up being about 11 inches tall.
So you are going way above and beyond to describe something that you could use the universal measurement scale on. It is the size of a loaf of bread on its end.
That's a really good... I've not heard anybody describe it that way. That's really good. It is about the size of a loaf of bread, I think. That's actually really good. A loaf of bread with a fan on top and a green light, which is really how I prefer my bread. So, yeah, that's good. It's about 11 inches tall. Now, a lot of people are like, I can't fit an 11-inch tall box in my entertainment center. It's okay. You can flip it horizontal. It'll work that way, too. It's also got a new controller. It's not radically different. It's got a slightly refined shape. They said, we've done, you know, user acceptance testing with our controller and have found that the Xbox One controller fits comfortably in 95% of all hands. And the new controller fits 98% of all hands comfortably. Okay, cool. It doesn't look very different. And that's good, because the Xbox One controller is the best video game controller that's ever been created. It has a new button in the middle of the controller, which is a share button. This is really nothing new. The Switch has a share button. The PlayStation 4 has a share button. It's just an easier way to share your screenshots and stuff like that. It's not something I use a ton on my other consoles, but I know it gets a lot of use by other people. And then the other important thing is that the D-pad, which is really important for especially like 2D type games and stuff, they took the same D-pad from the Elite Series 2 controller, that $180 Xbox controller that's out now. The really good D-pad from that is going to be on the standard controller for the next generation Xbox. In terms of specs, they're still not really talking details, but they are saying that it'll be 4 times more powerful than the Xbox One X. So crazy, crazy powerful. And to prove it, they showed a trailer for the next Hellblade game, which we didn't even know there was going to be another Hellblade game. And it was stunning. It was absolutely amazing. Like, until they get to the part where it's like showing monsters and stuff, I don't think you could really tell that it wasn't actors on screen. Like, that's how good games are going to look on the Xbox One. Sorry, see, I'm already screwing it up. The Xbox Series X. So, the name, Richard, thoughts?
Yeah, it's the Xbox Series X box. This is Windows Phone Series 7 all over again. I hate this. The thing that's crazy about it is they're already backtracking on it. There are already stories out saying that Microsoft has clarified that no, they're just going to call it the Xbox. But this is Series X of the Xbox. Why is Microsoft so bad at this?
I'm not even sure that I would call that a clarification. I think that makes it more confusing. I don't understand that messaging from them.
Right. It's like when the iPad 3 was the iPad.
Right.
I don't get it. I also am not a fan of the form factor. You know, from past conversations, I don't like boxes that can't stack. One of the beautiful things about the last several generations of the Xbox is that it was delightfully stackable. You can't do that anymore.
I would not have stacked either of the Xbox One, any of the three consoles that fit in the Xbox One family, because they all had fans on the top.
Dude, I am not stressing my Xbox.
Well, that's true. When all you're doing is watching Blu-rays on it, yeah, I guess it's probably fine.
Speaking of which, did you mention that it does, in fact, have a drive slot?
It does.
For media.
It does. And it is a 4K Blu-ray player again. So that's good. I'm okay with this design. I think it looks fine. It'd be better if it was thinner, but I don't really care that much. It's not going to look awful. It's not going to stand out. It's not garish in any way. Like, it's fine, I guess. Now, there are still rumors kind of resurfacing that, you know, like a year ago or whatever, there were rumors that, oh, there's actually going to be two consoles that are going to be released at the same time, Anaconda and Lockhart. And then a couple months ago, Phil Spencer was like, psh, no, there's only going to be one. Just one.
Yeah, I think twice they've denied that now.
Yeah. And now those rumors are resurfacing. So it's sounding more and more like that Lockhart, the less powerful version of the next generation console, is going to be coming. I still think there's room there and that it could make a lot of sense to get a lower cost box out at launch that you primarily use with the Project X Cloud streaming service.
I want it to be a cube. Half the size.
That would be cool.
It would be
cool. That seems doable.
Right.
All right. Well, that seems like enough. I don't think we need to get into everything else. There's other tech stuff, but it's all kind of rumors. We'll get into that later when more of it is actually announced. So the name is weird. The design is fine. I'm excited about an even better controller. I think that sums it all up for me. And I am super pumped about the graphics. I don't rewatch game trailers. I rewatched this Hellblade trailer at least three times. It was so amazing.
I think you need to give some credit to the programmers and the studio that are rendering that too, because if they're making things look that lifelike, yeah, part of it is the equipment you're playing it on, but it also means that the rendering technology is getting even that much better.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The folks over at Ninja Theory are doing an amazing job with what they've got. So, yeah, certainly all the kudos to them. Tony was keeping track 9 minutes on that story. I'm not sure that deserves a good job. All right. I promise this next one will be shorter. And I don't just do that because it's PlayStation and I'm an Xbox fanboy. But PlayStation had a really cool announcement today, I think. They've announced a new accessory for their DualShock 4 controller. It's the back button attachment. This is a terrible name, but it's a cool idea. It's a little accessory that you plug into the bottom of your controller where the headphone jack and the other extra peripheral connector thingy is. And what it does is it provides two buttons that would be on the back of the controller, roughly where your ring finger lands when you're holding the controller. And what that does is it gives you the ability to map any other button to those ring finger placement buttons. So if you would normally be wanting, for whatever particular game you're playing, wanting to be able to push two buttons at about the same time that are like right next to each other or a little bit further apart, and you can't get to both of them with your thumb, you can map one of them to these bottom buttons that you can then hit with your finger. If this sounds really familiar, it's one of the coolest features of the Xbox Elite controller. That controller has paddles on the button that you can map to different buttons. It's really awesome. At least it sounds really awesome. I've never used one of them. But so that's basically what it is. And then it's got a little OLED screen on the back so that you can do all of the programming of this, you know, customizing those buttons right from this little screen. And then it also will store up to three presets. So maybe you've got one for shooters and one for racing game. Racing games probably doesn't make as much sense. Maybe it does. I don't know. But up to three different presets there. And you don't lose your headset jack. It's got another headset jack that just passes through on to the controller. So this looks awesome. And I think the most surprising thing about it is the price. $29.99. to add on to your controller. That seems really, really reasonable to me. Now, I get that it's only a couple of buttons and stuff, but if you want the same functionality on an Xbox, you have to buy an Elite controller, which The first one was $150. The newest one is $180. So I think this is a pretty smart move by Sony with the PlayStation. And I wonder if when PlayStation 5 comes out next year, will the next DualShock controller, the base model, support this by default? If so, then they've got a big, you know, leg up on the Xbox Series X controller. If you've got these back buttons just built in, probably won't do that, but maybe they will. And if so, that would be really cool. So if you want this for your PlayStation gaming, cost you $30, doesn't actually become available until January 23rd.
I am fascinated by the design and engineering forethought that enables this.
How so?
Like the just the idea that they can, that they built a product that is modular enough or adaptable enough that they can, you know, tack something onto it that can operate in a way that kind of seems like it's a seamless part of the controller. I think that's just brilliant. I'm really impressed by that industrial design.
It is really nice. It's really nice. All right, last gaming story, I promise, and this one will be really fast, but it's a sad story. Redbox, the service that you know, they have their big ugly vending machines in every grocery store you've ever been to, and you walk right past it usually, probably. For a while have been renting games, which is kind of a big deal for gamers because there aren't many places to rent video games now that there aren't Blockbusters and things like that around. Well, Redbox has decided we're done with this. We're not renting games anymore. And in fact, today, December 17th, Redbox put all of their games on sale. If you go to the game section of the Redbox website, it's all just for sale. When you click a game, it says, find a place to buy this game. It's not renting anymore. So they're clearing out their stock. They aren't doing this anymore. They didn't really say why, but it has to be financial. They must not have been making much money on this stuff. And
right
now it's going to be gone. Well, it's basically gone now. So it's a good opportunity to pick up some used games.
Yeah,
for sure. But the selection isn't huge, and it's based on what's in the boxes near you. So finding them isn't going to be the easiest, and you better look fast because I think these are going to go really, really quickly. So
what does this leave? Like, there's basically GameStop, which is still a company trying to figure out what it wants to be when it grows up.
Well, but GameStop doesn't rent games, really.
Right, but they sell, they're the secondhand market. So that's your opportunity to get a game cheaper than buying it firsthand.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, if you want to buy games, like pre-owned games, at a discount, it's GameStop, it's eBay, like that's Amazon, that's pretty much it. If you want to rent games, I can only think of two actual options left. There's a subscription service that's very much like Netflix called Gamefly, where they will let you have one or two discs at a time and they mail them to you. You put the games in your queue, they'll send you games. When you send one back, you get another one.
I didn't realize they still operated.
Yep. Yeah, Gamefly is still around, but it's kind of pricey. The regular rate, I think, is $23 a month for one game at a time. It's pretty pricey. Mm-hmm. And you don't have that much control over what you get to play, because if the game that you want that's number one in your queue isn't available when you send a game back, they're going to send you something else. So that can get frustrating. So Gamefly is available and certainly convenient, because you don't have to walk any further than your mailbox, but it is pricey and a little bit kind of limited on what you're actually going to get.
I was going to ask you a question, and I see that the answer to my question is in the notes. So I'm just going to ask the question as if I didn't see that anyway. Is it possible that some libraries actually have games and you could check out games?
Yes, it absolutely is possible. My local library and many libraries around Ohio do have games. They have Xbox One, Xbox, I think they still have Xbox 360 games, so they've probably been doing this for a while. PlayStation 4, they've even got Switch games. So, and it's the library, so it's free, and it's like anything that's popular at a library. There might be lots of people waiting in line. So you've got to put a hold on these games and wait your turn. And a lot of times, like I know my library, they only let you have a game for 7 days. And if there's more people waiting for it, you can't renew it. So if you're thinking that you're going to get some massive 70-hour role-playing game and finish it in the amount of time that you have the game from your library, well, that might not work out so well. Whereas with Gamefly, you can keep the game as long as you want. So library might work well for you. It might not. You know, if you're thinking rentals because you just want to try out a game before buying it, then the library is a great option. But if you're renting to finish games, then maybe Gamefly is your better option.
Interesting. Hey, to go back a story, I just have to laugh as we're talking here. Dan Seifert over at The Verge just posted saying, how is this Sony button attachment a real thing? This looks like a Kickstarter project that'll never ship.
It kind of does, but it is a real thing.
Kind of amazing.
Yeah, yeah. All right, that's it for our gaming news this week. So if you've made it this far in the show, that means that you probably like the show. Can you help us? Just do us a small favor. Help us expand our audience in the best possible way. No, it's not going out to iTunes and leaving a rating and a review, although we like those. The best way to share is to actually share. Go and tell some friends to check out Entertainment 2.0. We're available everywhere.
And then tell them to mash that subscribe button.
Right. That time you actually used it correctly, Richard. Good job. Woo-hoo!
Good job. All right. I'm practicing the streaming thing.
Okay, good. So, Richard, what is going on in your entertainment center?
Well, let's see. It's been 4 weeks since we've talked. So, oh, man. Quite a bit. And I am going to plow through this very quickly. But there are a couple things that I do want to point out. So, you know, I bought a couple discs. One of them was John Wick 3. I mentioned when we were at the beach house, we watched John Wick 1 and 2. I love them. So I bought John Wick 3 on UHD so I could watch it. And of course, I go to back it up, and it's one of those discs that has 378 copies of the movie, supposedly, you know, indexed so that you can't tell which one is the real one. So I have to go install Java on my machine to be able to sort through that. And of course, everybody loves Java. Finally get that working. And then I go to redeem my digital code. Well, I believe it's Warner Brothers, if I remember correctly. I could be wrong on that, but no, it's not. It's one of the studios that is not participating in Disney movies anywhere. So probably Lionsgate or something like that. So I go, and you have to go to their website and put in the code, and it doesn't work. So, you know, I can't go to movies anywhere and just put it in there. I can't go to iTunes and put it in there. So I have to send them a message, and they send me a code, and then I have to go to their website again. And that time it does work. And then I have to go redeem it. And I think it sent me to Voodoo to redeem it. And so it's only available to me in this one service. Oh no, I got to pick iTunes or Voodoo. So I picked iTunes. All right. So seriously, get with the times. Paramount, Lionsgate, MGM, I think they're the three big holdouts on the Movies Anywhere service. I don't understand why they're not on board. They were, in fact, Lionsgate was one of the best implementations of Voodoo, of Ultraviolet. So I don't quite understand why they're resisting this new format. Anyway.
It was Lionsgate, also, by the way. I looked it up.
It was Lionsgate. Okay. So then Westworld. I bought the second season of Westworld on disc. And I go to redeem the digital copy that comes with that. That is only available on Vudu. Only. Period. Like, who is intentionally buying TV series on Vudu? I'm sure some people are. You can write us and let us know. But you can't get it on Amazon. You can't get it on iTunes. The two major platforms that people would go to for TV series. So, awesome. Thank you so much for that. That's completely useless to me. So, also, this time of year, lots of stuff that I've been recording and haven't been able to watch. And so, guess what? My storage for my recordings got full. And I lost a bunch of recordings as a result of that.
Oh, no.
So, I needed to do the content shuffle. And guess what? I threw some bits out.
What?
I know.
Crazy.
There were some shows that I figured, you know what, this is probably never going to not be available somewhere, so I can probably get rid of this. Or this is something that only had one season and I'm never going to watch it, so I can get rid of that. So yes, I did my what's the name of the woman that tells you to just get rid of the stuff that doesn't bring you joy? I got rid of the digital content that wasn't going to bring you joy.
Marie Kondo or something like that?
I Marie Kondo'd my DVR. So also the usual stuff that I've been watching, and I'm going to plow through most of this: The Conners, Superstore, Modern Family, The Good Place, up to date on all of that stuff. The Good Place, I was wrong about both The Good Place and Mr. Robot in terms of when the last episode was. And I was wrong because TV Time didn't have all of the future episodes in as placeholders, and they usually do. So I was led to believe that the Good Place season finale was what we actually saw, which was instead the fall finale or whatever they call it these days. So I'm glad that's not over, because I still want it to be good. and the season just hasn't really been all that interesting. And then Mr. Robot, oh my God, I'm all caught up on Mr. Robot. We are now at the point where the next episode is the 2-hour season finale. And I am so psyched. It is, these last 5 episodes have been amazing adrenaline rushes.
Yeah. I think I'm 1 episode behind, but wow, did this series pick up like crazy.
Yeah, well, with the one that you haven't watched yet, you're going to be scratching your head a lot going, who? So I'm thinking the finale should be really good, but it's been really, like, the season started so slow, I thought, and then it just got really, really good. All right, so here's where we power through. This is us in New Amsterdam. Been catching up a little bit on The Flash and Arrow. I haven't really made a whole lot of progress on Jack Ryan season two. Watch a little bit more of that. We watched all of season three of Grace and Frankie in the time that we haven't recorded. I watched all of season four of Eastsiders. I started and nearly finished The Crown season three. I watched all of Star Trek Discovery season two, which I bought on Blu-ray because I'm not going to pay the CBS extortion fee. I'm completely up to date on The Morning Show and The Mandalorian, and I'm loving both of those. Holy crap, The Morning Show gave like the biggest gut punch about two episodes ago. They pulled the rug out from the story that they've been telling you, and I totally fell, really, really good storytelling. Watch the first episode of The Servant. That's the new thing from M. Night Shyamalan on Apple TV Plus. That looks like it's going to be creepy and good. Looking forward to that. And of course, I have been watching, I shouldn't admit, all of the impeachment hearings. So there's been a lot of that going on as well. And then we watched one movie. We watched A Dog's Journey, which is the sequel to A Dog's Purpose. And it was good. It was nice. It wasn't wonderful. As a dog owner, it grabs you, and it's a hard movie to watch sometimes, but I enjoyed it. And, that was one of those where that tomato rating wasn't so good.
But still a good movie.
All right. But still a good movie. Now, you too have had about 4 weeks to be watching it and doing. And what you've been up to?
Well, it's been a very busy few weeks, so there has not been a lot of watching. Not even a ton of gameplay. Not as much as you would expect over that period of time for me. I do want to start by saying that I did get accepted into the Project X Cloud beta. I don't think I had the previous time we talked. And Project X Cloud is Microsoft's game streaming service. It's still in beta, so it's still free. And now there's over 50 games in this service, and a lot of them are really good, really good, like Ori and the Blind Forest and lots of other great games like that. So I decided to try this out on my phone. Right now, the beta is only Android devices, but I've got an Android phone and an Android tablet, and grabbed one of my Xbox One controllers that has Bluetooth, paired it up to my phone. It works really well when you're on a 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi network. It works really well. I could absolutely see myself doing more of this, so much so that I put one of those little clips that holds your phone connected to your Xbox controller. Those clips, they're like 10 or 15 bucks. I put one of those on my Christmas list because...
Makes it look like you're flying a drone.
Right. Just like if it could get nerdier than flying a drone, that's what this is. So yeah, play an Xbox on my phone. It works really, really well. So I'm really excited about this service. In terms of like playing games on my TV and stuff, still working through Gears 5 a little bit with Joe DiStasio. I haven't been able to work through that as fast. There's this Star Wars movie coming out at the end of the week, and he and his family...
What, it requires prep or something? I don't understand.
His family, they're the type of people where they want to be really prepared.
Are they sewing their costumes?
No. They've been spending their weekends rewatching all of the previous Star Wars movies.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. That's 8 movies, folks. That's a lot. That's a lot. I mean, that's... It's not quite Fast and the Furious, if we're being honest.
Yeah, no, it's not. I will probably rewatch the last two.
Yeah, I was thinking I would rewatch the previous episode, episode 8, but I don't own it. It's not on Disney Plus, and I'm going.
If only we're out on my server.
It were. But I also, it comes out in like 3 days and I don't have time to watch it. So Because I'm going to be seeing it twice on Friday. So.
Are you really? Oh, wow. I don't even have tickets yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a group of friends that I go to see these movies with. So those tickets were bought 3 weeks ago. And then when the Star Wars movies comes out, like everybody in my department at our office goes and sees it during the day. So Friday during the day, going to see it with coworkers. Friday in the evening, taking Eden and going to see it with her and some other friends. So twice in one day. It'll be awesome, I think. I hope. It better be a good movie if I'm going to watch it twice in one day. So back to games. Obviously playing a little bit of NHL. The coolest thing that happened in NHL, they added Snoop Dogg to the game. And that's pretty awesome. He does a little bit of commentating, which is hilarious and fun. And they even put a mode in the game where he's a player and you can win a bunch of like gear, like a Snoop Dogg jersey and stuff like that to wear, and emotes for like Snoop Dogg dances. And so like, it's ridiculous, but it's Snoop Dogg, so it's fun. Also a game was added to Game Pass that I've been really excited about. It's called My Friend Pedro. It is super fun. I'm so glad it came to Game Pass. I really like this game. It is a 2D side scroller where it's sort of like a twin stick shooter in that you're a dude who has a gun in each hand and you can also slow down time. And it's really just working through levels, trying to see like how many points you can rack up by. It's almost like a ballet of bullets. And you get score, you know, a higher score for really fancy kills and stuff. So it's really, really fun.
Ballet of bullets.
Yeah.
Guess what movie that phrase just brings to mind immediately?
John Wick?
No, close.
Something directed by John Woo?
The Matrix.
Oh, yeah, for sure. One other game, Toe Jam and Earl, Back in the Groove. This is a game that I was really excited about coming out this year because it's a sequel to a Sega Genesis game that I played when I was in like junior high with my best friend. And it's basically the same game. And it was free on Twitch, I think. So it was cool to get that for free. I've only played a little bit of it, but it is Toe Jam and Earl. If you remember that from your youth, go and get it. I think it's still available for free on Twitch for PC. That's it for games. I'm basically behind on all of my shows. You know, all two of them. No, I'm not behind on The Good Place, but I am behind on Mr. Robot.
Yeah. It's a head scratcher.
Yeah. So, but I do have one other piece of content going on in my house, and that is an audiobook called Wanderers. Have you heard of this book?
I have not.
It's really good. It's really good. It's kind of sci-fi. Takes place right around now, like they're talking about Twitter and Instagram and stuff like that, and Russians hacking our elections and stuff. But the basic premise is all of a sudden, one day, people just start basically sleepwalking. Like, you can't talk to them, you can't wake them up. They're just walking, and they walk out of their house, and they all start walking somewhere. And like more and more people join this flock. And you don't know why, and you don't know what's going on with him. And the story gets a whole lot more complicated, and it's really, really good. So if you're into reading, check out Wanderers. It's really, really good.
Hmm. Interesting. Sounds like a sci-fi or CW channel TV series.
Oh, no. It's way better. It's way better than a CW series.
I don't know. They're getting all the views for those crazy shows they have.
No.
All right. Well, that is it for what we have been up to. But before we go, I want to remind people, last time that we recorded this show, we talked about a new project we were putting together called DMZ Picks. This is a new section at the DMZ where we've put together all of our favorite stories. The contributors from the DMZ have kind of gone through the things that they think are some of the best items out there in the areas that we cover. which is gaming, connected home, and entertainment. And these are the things that we would recommend to people. These are the things that we have ourselves and we have tested and tried. And if you're interested in finding out what we think is worth spending your money on, go ahead and check out DMZ Picks. You can get there at thedigitalmediazone.com/picks. And we even have on that page a little collection of things that might make some really good stocking stuffers, items under $20 that the geek in your family might love.
Yep. Yeah, that was a lot of fun putting together. And with how often we get asked what we use, this was a brilliant idea on your part to put this on the site. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week's show. We won't be back next week because of Christmas, but I think we'll be back the week after that.
Yeah, we'll figure out something for New Year's week.
Yeah. I'll definitely be around. Hopefully there'll be a little bit of news. I think we'll probably do some CES predictions also. So check back in a couple of weeks for that. Until then, follow us on Twitter. He's Richard Gunther. I'm Josh Pollard. The website is DigiMediaZone. We're also on Instagram, Facebook, all that other stuff. All of that contact information is in the show notes. Richard, you also have another podcast, Home On, covering the latest smart home news. What's going on with the latest Home On?
So first off, I want to point out that I have had more episodes in the last 4-week time period of Home On than we have had of Entertainment 2.0.
That's got to be a first.
I am sure it is. I am sure it is. So on our latest episode, we have Scott Beck. He is the CTO of Abode Systems. They have a do-it-yourself security system that really competes with the likes of Ring and Nest and SimpliSafe and everything else out there. It's also a Zigbee and a Z-Wave hub. And their big news is that their system now works with HomeKit. What does that mean as far as all these other things that support or that they support? Well, you're going to have to listen to the episode to find out. But I think we had a really good conversation there. And then coming up, we have our annual technology.fm fireside chat where we go over our predictions from last week. Or last week. We predict things every week from last year. And we make predictions for next year and talk about our favorite stories of the year. This year, we'll be joined by my co-host at the Smart Home Show, Adam Justice. And remember, if you wait to get the version that we put out on the Home On feed, you get a shorter version because I cut out all of the pauses and ums, and you don't get your digital assistant triggered by those rascals over at Home Tech FM.
It's a good idea. Wait for the Home On version of the fireside. I love those other guys, but you should. Richard's version is the best version. There's just no other way to say it. All right. Well, and we, of course, invite you to come and enjoy this show live. We normally record Tuesday nights at 8:30 p.m. Eastern. There's video, there's audio, there's a chat room, and it's always so fun to have you all as part of the show. So that's going to do it for episode 504. He's Richard Gunther, and I'm Josh Pollard. Thanks for listening to Entertainment 2.0. Adios.
Goodbye.